Now, back to Open House with Team Reba.
Welcome back to Open House with Team Reba. I'm Eric Osnes from Home Street Bank Home Mortgage.
And I'm Reba Haas from Team Reba.
And with us today, we've got Ryan Weatherstone, who's an attorney with Puckett and Redford. And Ryan, thank you so much again for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
This has been great information, and we're learning kinds about, of course, Seattle ordinances and things a landlord needs to pay attention to and be careful about. And we were just talking about some rules that are specific to the city of Seattle. But as we all know, as Seattle goes, typically so goes the rest of the region.
Right.
So when things are changing and not necessarily in a good way for landlords, it's really important, even if you don't live in Seattle or own rental properties in Seattle, that you pay very close attention to that, because that could be coming your way as well. We were talking over the break about Section 8 housing. And I have quite a few customers that have Section 8 tenants.
Thanks for stealing my thunder. I was going to start with my other question, but go right ahead.
All right. You're over there texting. I don't know what you're doing over there, but
I'm responding to my brother who's starting his stem cell transplant today. So thanks very much.
Oh boy. Well,
you insensitive.
Jeez. Now I feel like now I feel bad. Oh. Well, I hope he does well.
Yes. Thank you.
Good. Good. So there's some changes coming up on Section 8 housing.
Yes. Back in this last legislative session, the state of Washington did pass a source of income discrimination bill. And what that means is that a landlord, beginning on September 30th of this year, mm-hmm. a landlord is no longer allowed to deny a tenant based solely on the on a legal source of income. Section 8 would be considered a legal source of income. So mm-hmm. You can't deny a tenant based on the fact that they use the Section 8 process.
Okay, for any listener who's not familiar with this, because there's going to be a bunch of our mm-hmm. listeners who might own rental property, but other people are going to be like, what is Section 8? Is that like a, an egg crate?
Is that better than Section 7?
Exactly,
So Section 8 is it's a HUD program that mm-hmm. that pays a portion of the rent for low-income tenants.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It takes a while to get onto the program. Sometimes there's wait mm-hmm. lists. Probably one of the best things that one can have is a Section 8 voucher that allows you to go to a private landlord, and it's basically enters into a three-way contract: the landlord with the housing authority, the landlord with the tenant, and the
right.
tenant with the housing authority. The mm-hmm. landlord will go ahead and pay a portion, or the housing authority will pay a portion of the tenant's rent, and the tenant has to pay the other portion.
Mm-hmm.
There are some requirements that you have to meet. You have to have an inspection that's done with the property.
Yep, I've had Section 8 mm-hmm. tenants, so yeah. I've been through this process, yeah.
So,
and sometimes it can be quite rigorous because they're looking for like lead-based paint, and there are other things that may be health-related issues, right, that they want you to clean up, or a window's broken, so it's safety and security and habitability and all of that.
Correct. And so every house that you go into, or every time if you're signing up for the new Section 8 program, there's usually going to be an inspection that's going to be required.
Right.
So that's going to be something that landlords may have to start going through.
Well, that's happening in Seattle pretty much with every rental property anyway already.
Well, that's the RIO program.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Seattle does have a income discrimination prohibition mm-hmm. as well, and
sure.
they've had that in place for a while. Bellevue has it. Redmond has it.
What do you mean by that? Income discrimination?
Yeah.
Meaning like where the income comes from, or?
Right.
Yes, where the income
okay.
comes from. So like
gotcha.
The Section 8 program or a veterans or any type of veterans program that is going to pay
okay.
part of the rent.
Okay.
It's been in effect in unincorporated King County and a few of the cities around mm-hmm. here for a while, specifically Seattle.
I just was curious because we mentioned 420 and cannabis. I actually don't get involved in those transactions because if you're someone who benefits from a person whose money comes from those, and if there was a seizure or something like that, like you can lose whatever you've earned. And if I, as a real estate agent, sell a property and it was money from one of those programs, I might have to give my commission back.
And this is only for legal sources of income.
Right.
Illegal sources of income are not that
yeah.
you can still discriminate if somebody's
right.
selling heroin. I mean, that's their
right.
main source of income.
Yeah.
So that's,
got it.
Even
well,
in
I don't want them as my tenant anyway. But yeah, of course. But all right. So why is this becoming such a big issue? And why are people kind of afraid of it?
I think there's a fear that there's going to be an anti-Section 8 backlash, or landlords mm-hmm. aren't accepting people who are
ads where someone has said, no Section 8. And I've always been surprised by that.
And, participants of the Section 8 program are they're going to keep care of the property just as well as a normal tenant is going to. But there's a negative stigma out there about
right.
participants of the Section 8 program. And I think this bill is attempting to address that and attempting to basically not allow it,
any type of discrimination whatsoever, even if it means the landlord has to jump through a few extra hoops.
But a good part of this program, too, there is a landlord mitigation fund that has also been set up. If there's a delay in the program or if there's a delay in the tenancy beginning due to the inspection, the landlord can apply to this landlord mitigation program.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% familiar with how it all works, but it is something that can provide a little bit of relief for landlords.
And I have customers that have actually had very good experiences with Section 8 tenants.
Yeah, I had one for 14 years.
Right.
She was delightful.
Right. The other thing that is a factor, though, is if you do have a Section 8 tenant and you intend to increase the rent on your property, that does need to be approved
by the state. And
I've had fairly good luck with it, actually.
Really?
Yeah, It's been all right.
I did not.
Yeah.
Of course, I was in a different state.
So a few extra hoops you have to jump through. But all right. Well, okay. This is fine. We can live with that one.
Okay.
What about the loud, noisy, obnoxious tenant? They're yelling at each other. The cops are getting called all the time.
Domestic violence issues.
As a landlord, I'm finally fed up with it. I give them a 10-day, get the heck out. But what happens after that 10 days?
After the 10 days, those notices are going to be good for 60 days. So if a tenant reoffends or if a tenant violates the conditions of your lease agreement or whatever the 10-day notice was supposed to address, if they violate that after the 10th day, before that notice expires 60 days down the road, you can proceed forward with an eviction.
Okay, you can.
You can. There is a remedy. There's a misconception in the city of Seattle that you have to have three of them in a 12-month period before moving forward. That's not true. Noncompliance with one notice is enough to move forward on an eviction.
Oh, really? Okay. So how did it... Was it just like some weird hearsay thing that started this whole you gotta like tenants to tenant conversations, or was there like a website
I know there's an old landlord tenant attorney who I won't name who held that belief and nobody really corrected him on it.
Mm. Oh.
And I think he told a lot of his clients that, and it got around.
Okay.
But that is not the case.
So
noncompliance with a notice is enough to move.
Well, that's good to know. So if you were one of that person's clients, we're just telling you right now, one is good.
All right. Okay. And Ryan, I know that your firm really sort of specializes in evictions. And so I have a couple questions for you. But before I even get to that, how can people reach you if they have questions for you?
Yes.
Sure. The best way to probably go is to go to PucketRedford.com.
Can you spell that for Puckett?
Sure. It's PUCKETTREDFORD.com.
Okay. So two T's.
Two T's. And that'll have all our contact information.
Okay.
And that'll have some common forms that people can also use as well. So.
Awesome. And when we have this on our replay on our blog and website, we'll have this information posted as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening right now and you're not getting, maybe you're driving in your car and you can't get a chance to write it down, you can go back and re-listen to this. And we'll also have it on the blog with all of your contact information.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
So let's say that you do unfortunately have to take a tenant to the eviction process. What's the typical time frame, the cost, what's involved? How do you go about getting that started?
Sure. In 1 minute or less.
In 1 minute or less.
Because that's about how much we have left.
The process can take between 30 to 60 days.
That's it? I always hear it's like 6 months.
6 months is a little bit too long. The unlawful detainer process is a shortcut process. The whole point behind the unlawful detainer action is to resolve property disputes quickly and efficiently. Mm-hmm. And so it can take between a month to 2 months. The cost, different attorneys are going to cost different amounts. So, there's an attorney out there I know that charges $3,000 to just start. We are much lower than that.
Okay.
But it really depends on how much time and effort the attorney is going to have to put into the matter. So,
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do people have to put in a retainer like you do with some attorneys in that kind of situation? Or is it just a charged by the hour kind of thing, or
it's usually charged by the service. That's kind of how we do it. Charged by
fee
the service.
Service. Got it. Okay.
Some will do by the hour. Some will do charged by the service.
All right. Excellent. Well, that's good. That's honestly, I just learned something right there because I have had this belief it's been 6 months for a long time. So I'm like that guy with the three notices.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so Ryan Weatherstone, thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate having you on. We'd love to have you back.
Well, thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
All right. Thank you all, everyone. Hope this is a great show for you. We'll see you next Saturday at 2 o'clock. Thanks for listening into Open House with Team Reba. Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Open House with Team Reba. To contact us, visit Team Reba at re/max Metro Eastside on Facebook or email info@teamreba.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 2 for more Open House with Team Reba here on AM 1590. The Answer. The preceding program was sponsored by Team Reba of RE/MAX Metro East Side and Eric Osnes of Home Street Bank Home Mortgage.